this morning's talk, the Sunday sermon. Hope you've all been to confession. On the second day of the meditation retreat. And try and build up and reinforce the things I've been saying so far. And perhaps the strangest part of the teachings here, if you haven't sort of done meditation with me before, you know, is the teaching of like not doing anything. You know, not putting effort and striving, or sort of, you know, where the effort and striving is to stop, and how this whole thing actually works. Because many of you may have been thought that in meditation, you know, you have to, you know, establish, say, present moment awareness and silence, establish mindfulness, then you go to the breath, then you go to the next stage, then you go to the next stage, as if it's like going through school or university. You know, first you do your year 12s, then you do your sort of first year exams, second year exams, third, fourth year exams, you get your bachelor's, then you do your master's, and then you go on to your PhD, and then you go on to your Nobel Prize. Well, whatever it is, it's not sequential. And it's important to understand that, because when you understand what the path is, it's not going on to the next stage, it's going into the next stage. It makes a whole path of meditation and a place of effort very, very clear. And you know, this is the path of meditation. It's why it is a different path to many other things which you do in the world. Which is why sometimes people find difficulty with it. It's not they can't meditate, but they're doing it in the wrong way. One of the greatest quotes which we have is a translation which was done by Venerable Jnanatiloka in this famous word of the Buddha. And it's a translation which is accurate to the Pali, and when I read it, it really stood out and said, wow, now that's very powerful and very deep. He said that this is a path without groaning. No groans. So if you're groaning, oh, it's tough, oh, it's hard, you've missed the path. This is a path with no groaning. Okay, so if you're groaning, having trouble, struggling, it's not you can't do it, you're off the path. That's why, you know, it's rough. One of the other great quotes is, and this is from the Dhammacetiya Sutta, when the King Prasenadi, just before he was about to pass away, he went to see the Buddha for the last time, not knowing he was about to die, and just checking in with his teacher he'd known for so many years, and he went into the famous Jetavana monastery, the Jeta Grove. And he asked the monks, where's the Buddha, is he in? And they said, yeah, he's in his hut. You know, normally you can't so disturb him, but you know, you're the king, for goodness sake. Just knock on the door and I'm sure he'll let you in. So he went up to the hut, knocked on the door, and the Buddha let him in. And then the king, this great majesty, sort of went on his knees, and he didn't just bow to the Buddha, he started kissing his feet. Smooch, 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 smooch. And of course, you know, the Buddha was a bit sort of surprised and said, what are you doing that for, great king? And then sort of this great king outpoured his like love for his teacher, just how the Buddha had helped him and how he enjoyed coming to this monastery and listening and seeing the Buddha. And just all his life, this was like, you know, one of the sort of great people in his life. And he literally loved the Buddha. He had great affection for him. But then the Buddha, in the subsequent discussion, he asked a question, and this was a pertinent part of this discourse for me. He said, why do you enjoy coming to this monastery and not other monasteries? And he said, because all the monks in this monastery are smiling, and they make me happy. And then the Buddha said, yes, great king, that's what you can expect when people meditate properly, when they get insights. Smiles and happiness. So, I can tell how your meditation's going. You don't need to report to me in interviews. I can see it by the shape of your mouth. If the edges are turned down, you've lost it. You're not doing it. Even horizontal is not good enough. But if the edges are turned upwards, then I say, yep, you're getting it. It's a path without groaning. It is a happy path. And how can that be when people sometimes feel so frustrated. What are you doing wrong? And the following simile is just reinforcing what I've already said before about going in, not doing anything, keeping still, and watching things happen as an observer rather than as an agent doing things. It's a simile I've often repeated, and you've heard it before, many of you, but it needs to be said. It's a simile of the thousand-petal lotus. And it's a very effective simile, because the simile just carries with it, you know, many truths and insights, but also it elucidates the attitudes which work in meditation. And of course, you will all know that the lotus is one of the great symbols of Buddhism. And even the person who, some time ago, there was a big lotus software company, I don't know what's happened to it since, but the owner or the founder of that was a Buddhist in the US, and so he deliberately used the Buddhist symbol, you know, for his company. As far as the lotus race car is concerned, I think that might also be a Buddhist, you know, the fast path to Nibbana. But anyhow, the idea of a lotus is an old symbol of Buddhism for many reasons. And one of the reasons is that at night time the lotus closes up. So if you look at a lotus, maybe just before dawn, you'll see it's a closed bud. And on the outside of that lotus, the outermost petals are very coarse and rough and dusty. Because those outermost petals have to protect the ones inside. And they have to withstand, you know, the friction of the dust and the rain and the wind. So they are very coarse and rough, and they've got no fragrance. The outermost petals of a lotus. But when the sun rises in the morning and starts to warm that lotus, the outermost petals open. They open out slowly when they receive the warmth of the sun. And as they open out, they reveal the second layer of petals. Because the second layer is also close to the outside, it is tough and not so beautiful, certainly not so fragrant, but it is more beautiful than the outermost petals. And once that second layer of petals can receive the warmth of the sun, then they too open out to reveal the third layer of petals, which is now beginning to look very beautiful, soft, and fragrant. And once that third layer of petals can receive the sun, it too opens out to reveal the fourth layer. And the fourth layer reveals the fifth layer, the sixth layer, the seventh layer. Layer after layer of petals opens out in sequence, once the thing which contains it can receive the warmth of the sun. And the deeper you go into that lotus, just the more subtle is the petal, the more beautiful, and the scent becomes even more divine. As the further you go in, the more beautiful, refined, and fragrant are the petals. And how do you go to the next layer of petals, even more beautiful, fragrant, and refined? Let the sun stay on it for a while, until it opens up. And that's precisely what happens in one's meditation. You are that lotus, the body and the mind, which you recognize as yourself, is this lotus. Because it's closed up for most of the time, it has to withstand all the pain and pleasure of life, all the difficulties and stress, the friction of being with other people, and the winds which blow continuously of success and failure in your lives, health and sickness. So the outermost petal is always very rough and often unpromising. You've seen that so many times, that people come into meditation. You look at them, they're just like these dirty, grubby, old outer petals of lotuses. And sometimes they come up and they know that, and they think there's no chance for them to get in anywhere in meditation. And I invoke that simile. Even in the most unpromising lotus buds, just allow it to open up, and inside you'll see and discover inside of you, the most beautiful, fragrant, subtle, and lovable lotus petals. It's inside of you. You've done that with prisoners, with murderers, rapists. Inside of that is these incredibly wonderful, beautiful petals. It's the outermost layer. It's the one which is all coarse and rough and hard. So that's you. So what do? To open yourselves out. You just stay with you. The sun in this simile represents mindfulness, attention, together with kindness. It shines on you and warms you and opens you out, like kindness will always do. Kindness opens things. Anger closes them. So you maintain your mindfulness and kindness just on this, whatever it happens to be. And you find it opens out. That's what you do. First of all, present moment, that's where the mindfulness starts to act. You just stay in the present moment and it opens out. I should have actually said, first of all, you stay with your body. That's the roughest of them all. And as you stay in the body, just stay with this body, its feelings even, just your posture. And after a while the body opens out to reveal the present moment. You're just here in this moment. Try it and you'll see. Just stay with the present, stay with the body, notice its feelings, and soon you'll find you are in this moment we call now. All the past and future has disappeared. And as you go into the present moment, you just stay with the present moment just now. You don't do anything. You don't look for any more stages. And usually what happens, you stay in the present moment long enough. Now with mindfulness and kindness, it opens out. And what you experience is this beautiful silence. And I've called it the silent present moment awareness. But you don't make it happen. You just stay on the present moment with kindness and compassion, and the thing opens out in its own time by itself. And the experience of it, you don't know exactly the moment when you fell silent. Just you realize after a while, no thoughts going on. It's quiet. It's happened naturally. You haven't chosen to do this. You haven't selected this. You haven't clicked any mouse and it's come up on your screen. It's just happened all by itself. And what do you do next? Nothing. You just stay in that silence. You don't go anywhere. Your job again is to warm that layer of petals with your mindfulness and kindness. You just notice it open out. As I said last night, because the body is becoming quiet, and because you're being silent, now the thoughts aren't moving. So the only thing left which is moving at that stage is your breathing. So inside the silence layer of petals, that opens out and you experience the breath. And again, this is not something you choose. You don't say, I'm now going to watch the breathing. It's just there for you. As the layer of petals opens out. Now, if you go to the breath that way, it's always very, very beautiful and subtle from the very beginning. However, if you try and do the breath straight away, it's like peeling the lotus to get in the inside, doing it forcefully. It really injures the lotus. Remember what that lotus is, it's you. Too much force. If you let it happen naturally, just sitting there with kindness, with mindfulness, being in the moment, silence comes, and then the breath is there. So you've got this flow of petals, the breath, breathing in, breathing out, nice and gentle. Because it's natural, it's much easier to stay with. So many people make the mistake during breath meditation in forcing their mind onto the breath far too soon. You're in a rush. So because of that, the people just start watching the breath. Come on, get your act together, watch the breath, go in, go out, go in, go out. You start wandering off, stop it, go back to the breath. And you use so much force that you never really get anywhere in meditation. It's a struggle, it's an effort, and often you get very frustrated. And sometimes people say, I can't meditate,
and they give up and never come back again. So they've gone the wrong path. The path of groaning is the path they've got. So instead we try this lotus simile. In this very moment, you know, right now you find the breath. And in the breath, after a while it just opens out to the next layer of petals, which is the full awareness of the breath. As I was mentioning last night, this is just where you can see the breath in the very beginning of an in-breath. You can see it to its peak and see it fall away relatively rapidly until it stops altogether. You can see this pause between the breaths. You can see the first arising of the sensation of the out-breath. You see it grow until it too fades away. And then you get the second interval between the out-breath and the in-breath. This is not something you force yourself to do. Sure, you can force it. Come on, all do it now, the very beginning of the in-breath. Yeah, you can do it through force, but it's not the same thing. Instead, we allow it to happen naturally. And it does happen naturally. We're just sitting there watching our breath. And because we're quiet, mindfulness with kindness, you find the thing opens out. You get this wonderful layer of petals, a full awareness of the breath. And because it happens naturally, you do it because there's so much going on there. It's so interesting just to watch this breath. I know that some people say, what, you spend 9 days watching your breath? Are you out of your mind? That must be so boring. But for those of you who've had some experience in meditation, you find it's not boring at all. It's actually fascinating, interesting, peaceful, delightful. This is just what it feels like. That's why people love meditating. So when it happens naturally, that layer of petals called the full awareness of the breath, it's very beautiful and fragrant, which is why you love just being there. And of course, because you are Westerners, the way you've been trained, you can't wait to get to the next stage. Yeah, come on, I'm here to get some jhanas on this retreat. At least I want to see a nimitta. I've been coming to this retreat for so long. Yeah, come on, get your act together. There's only 8 days to go. That sort of attitude stops everything happening. There's no sun shining anymore. There's no mindfulness together with compassion. So remember to keep that sun shining, the sun of kindness, the sun of mindfulness. And then it just opens out by itself. Just the full awareness of the breath gets more and more delightful. It's not just you're watching every moment of the breath. Every moment of the breath is beautiful. And that's such an important stage of meditation. I often call it the tipping point of meditation, you know, using a common English phrase. You know, that fulcrum where the meditation really starts to take off. The time when you really enjoy just closing your eyes and just being still. Because what happens is that full awareness of the breath, the petals open. And it's a delightful layer of petals inside. And they really are beautiful and fragrant. It's just delicious. And they are quite subtle as well. Instead of being coarse and thick like the outermost petals, these are very, very thin and refined. It's a beautiful breath. I know that some time ago people said, beautiful breath, maybe that's not the best translation. Because you're not seeing the breath, you're feeling it. So they corrected me and I accept this, and I think the best translation now is the delightful breath. You're just having so much fun with it. And it's that stage when you're just watching the whole movement of the breath from beginning to end. And it's so delightful. Thoughts can't come in. Even sounds can't come in. The reason why sounds can't come in? You're just having too much fun with the breath. It's similar to an old simile of a couple of disciples here in Perth, Malaysians who are living in Australia. And one Friday evening after the talk, they came and told me a funny experience they had that week. They're just the two of them at home, and they were just watching a movie, sitting on the sofa. It must have been a very wonderful movie, because when they finished, the movie finished, one of them got up to go to the toilet, and the other one turned on the kettle to make a cup of tea. And as they both got up from the sofa, they noticed very strange. There was many things missing from the shelf behind the sofa, many valuable things. They soon checked and discovered a burglar had been in the house and had actually been in the same room where they'd been watching the TV, and they hadn't heard a thing. And during the movie they'd stolen so many valuable things, literally from behind their back. There was a very cheeky burglar, but the burglar got away with it. And I told them, if only you could do that while you're meditating, to be so enjoying your meditation, so people get up and go, they make a noise, you don't even hear it. So it shows it is possible to cut off the sense of sound. The only thing is that just we're not enjoying our meditation enough to be able to do that. If your meditation becomes more engrossing than a favorite movie, then it happens. You can't feel the body. You can't hear sounds. Now you know why we call this a tipping point. The breath becomes so delightful, it absorbs you. And at that point, you know, you're not interested in sounds or even thoughts. This is too interesting, it's too much fun. This is also the point when the delightful breath happens, that you don't need any effort anymore. You know, there wasn't really any need for effort anyway, but now the whole process is just running on delight. You don't have to apply the mind, you just can't take your mind away from it. Because the mind is enjoying, it's being satisfied, the contentment is built up because you're having the most wonderful time. And this is the time when people start meditating for long periods of time. You know what it's like sometimes after 40, 50 minutes you look at your clock, it's only 10 minutes, damn. 15 minutes, you're not having a very hard time, so sometimes you keep looking at your clock. When you're having a wonderful time, just you don't even look at the clock, you're just having a great time. You think, oh, I better get up now. What? 3 hours have gone past. And that's what happens. You sit for long periods of time because there's so much joy and delight in just watching the breath go in. Oh, delicious. The breath go out, delicious. There's one of the monks who came here many years ago. I was just reading about him a few minutes ago. Ajahn Gunha, for those of you who remember him. This is maybe, 20 years ago. And he's a Thai monk. He's a very good monk. But you know the only teaching he'd ever give on meditation? He was very brief and to the point. He just would tell all his disciples, when you're breathing in, just breathe in. Thai people understand what I mean here. Breathe in. Sabah. That's how he would say it. Sabah. Breathing out. Sabai. Sabai means just beautiful, nice and easy and comfortable. The sort of feeling when you're just, you know, having your breakfast and sunning yourself on the stupa with your favorite cup of coffee and some toast. Ah, just life is just so sabai. Now, if you get an idea of the meaning of that Thai word, and it's not an equivalent English word, I can never find one, so sabai. So that's how you breathe in. Just nice and beautiful and wonderful and joyful and, oh, just sabai. And breathe out, sabai. And that's the only teaching he ever gave. Just that. Just for your information, that was the monk who patted the king cobra and opened the door of your heart. If you know that story, I just say it because I just mentioned the monk. All the other monks saw this. They were meditating out in the jungle in Thailand. That must have been about 30 years ago now. And a big king cobra came up to them. You know king cobras? They are lethal. In that part of Thailand, they had a nickname for that snake. They called them the one-step snake. This was in the villages where I grew up as a monk. Why do they call it a one-step snake? I asked once. Because once they bite you, that's all you've got left. One step and dead. So that's that was true or not, but these were very dangerous snakes. And they were big. Huge. So this, in the middle of the jungle, snake came right up to this monk. Lifted up its head. So it was actually, at eye level. Is that bigger snake? You know, its tail was going over there somewhere. It lifted up its head, opened up its hood, at the monk. When I tell this story, I ask the audience, what would you do? Running is not an option. Because I've seen those snakes in my young days in Thailand. I just couldn't believe how fast they could move. There used to be a very huge python, maybe about 8 meters, 10 meters long. I'm not exaggerating, that's how long it was. It used to live in Wat Nanachat. And the first time I saw it, it wasn't scared, it was just in awe of the biggest snake I'd seen at that time. And he looked at me and I looked at him, or her, it's just about as far as you away from me. We looked at each other, and he was off. And he accelerated so fast. That's what really shocked me. If he'd have come in my direction, no way would I be able to outrun him. I think it was a her, actually. She was really, really fast. And that was really... Obviously, you can't outrun these snakes. They're just far too agile and quick for you. Even once, I always thought that I could jump in some river or lake until I saw them swimming equally fast across the lake. There's no escape except for metal, obviously. But anyway, so there was this snake. And this Ajahn Ganha, what he did, it's brilliant. He lifted up his hand and patted it on the head. Thank you for coming to visit me, he said in Thai. Could you do that? Well, that's the sort of sabai monk he was, patting king cobras on the head. And of course, the king cobra never bit him, because they actually discovered that actually king cobras like being patted on the head. And it just is very rare to get the opportunity. And the king cobra was having a wonderful time being patted on the head until it sort of closed its hood. Now, once it was being patted enough, closed its hood, went down, and then went to visit another monk. Up, come on, pat me. And the other monk told me, no, go back to him, I'm not telling you. That's like the true story. That's this monk who's just breathing in sabai, breathing out sabai. Now that was a brilliant instruction, very brief. It was focusing on that stage of meditation, on the delightful breath. He just made a quick shortcut to it. So when that comes up, that's just one of the layer of petals which you can expect happens. And many of you will see that, experience that during this retreat, if you haven't experienced it already. Just breathing out, it's just so nice. Ah, this is beautiful. So what do you do next? Nothing! Any time that idea comes up into your head, what should I do next? Should be alarm bells come up, red lights, flags. Stupid, you're missing it. What you're doing next is not the question. It's always what you're doing now. Mindfulness in the moment. Next moment, let it happen. Your job, your whole role, mindfulness in the present moment. And stop yourself going into the future or the past. That's where all control comes from. Going off into the future. Worrying about where you want to get to. And trying to make it happen. In the present moment, if you really get into it, there can't be any effort. No place to go. So how can you move? You're just here. So your job is just to be in the moment. In this particular case, be with a beautiful breath. It's not a question of what we do next. Just let the sun of mindfulness and compassion shine on the delightful breath. Don't know how long it takes. I can't predict how long the sun takes to open up the layer of petals, but I know it will. Just give it time. Wait in the moment, don't wait in the future. And as the sun of mindfulness and compassion warms that particular layer of petals, it opens. And in the middle of the beautiful breath, that's where you get the lights and images. These are the real ones, the powerful ones. So if you're watching this beautiful, delightful breath, it's so nice and so peaceful and so subtle and so still, and from its middle you start seeing the light. Those are the nimittas. It's another layer of petals deep inside of you, far more refined and beautiful, and if you like, fragrant, but you can't smell anything, that's just a metaphor. And sometimes people have this problem. Sometimes the nimitta is there but it's not strong, so should they go back to the breath or should they stay on the nimitta? And this particular simile of the thousand petal lotus helps understand exactly what's going on and what your response should be. Because what's happening, the layer of petals called the beautiful, delightful breath has half opened. And you can see just what's inside the nimitta, the next layer of petals. But it hasn't fully opened yet. So what did you do? You don't know whether the sun is strong enough. Leave it alone, let it just happen. And if the time isn't ripe yet, just the layer of petals will close again. You haven't got enough mindfulness and compassion yet. And you just go back to the delightful breath. It's okay, that's good enough. But if you have enough mindfulness and compassion and stillness, you will open up. The beautiful breath, the delightful breath will open up and continue to open up. And so as if the beautiful, delightful breath just goes out here. And you can't see it anymore as you go inside to see this beautiful nimitta. So when that happens, remember that simile. It's if you're like you're halfway between the delightful breath petal and the nimitta petals. So you just got to let nature happen. Don't do anything. Just stay where you are. Just be kind, make peace, be gentle, and just see what happens. So if you keep still, keep being peaceful, keep being kind, it might close up. It doesn't matter, you haven't disturbed the process. You don't go too far backwards. Just keep on being mindful, being kind. Then it'll start opening up again, and maybe next time it'll open up completely. So you can see the full nimitta. And when nimittas arise, these lights in the mind, it's a very profound level of petals. Because you haven't really seen those before, at least you can't remember the last time you've seen them. Because at least you saw them at the end of your last life, when you died. But there they are again, and sometimes we can't really understand them. When those things actually happen, and people come and ask me, was this a nimitta, was it not a nimitta? Usually, as a teacher, I ask you, where did it come from? What were you experiencing just before that nimitta? And that's why, if someone tells me, just watching the breath and just so nice and so peaceful, great, now that really is a good one, because it's come from the right place. If it comes up too early, sometimes it could be a nimitta, sometimes it couldn't, but it's not really that useful. It's much better to just follow the usual way. It just happens naturally. This is the well-worn path, which most people do. Up through the breath, beautiful breath, delightful breath, and it vanishes, and you've got this beautiful nimitta. Because if you go through the beautiful, delightful breath, the delight which you're actually experiencing there is a sign of the energy of your mindfulness. Your mindfulness is becoming powerful. So when the beautiful, delightful breath disappears, you have enough energy, mental energy, mindfulness energy, and delight that the nimitta does appear beautiful and stable. Because it needs to be understood, and this was an insight which took me years to really get. Because when those nimittas started to come up, I think, what the hell are they? And it took a long while to understand that these are reflections of your mind. In the same way you can, in the morning, look at your face in the mirror. And the image you see in the mirror is not your face, but it's an image of your face. The same, that light which you see in the mind at this particular stage, it's an image, a reflection of your mind, of your citta. And for those of you who know your suttas, the Buddha said that this citta is prabhasara, is radiant, is beautiful. And what did he mean by that? Scholars can debate it, but once you get to the stage of the meditation, you're facing that radiant mind. That's what it looks like. That's why the Buddha described it as radiant. It's beautiful, so bright, like a sun, right in front of your mental eye. Once you realize that this is a reflection of your mind, because all the other five senses in the body have disappeared, you understand exactly what it is. And that really helps you find your way around the next steps. Because to open up that nimitta, to see what's inside, what should you do? Nothing. Stay perfectly still. And just allow the whole thing to open out in its time. It's beautiful because you've already got powerful mindfulness. To really get into the next stage, remember, say, not get onto the next stage, into the next stage. You've just got to build up the energy. Build it by not doing anything. It's like when you earn some money. If you keep spending and spending and spending, it never accumulates. But imagine making money, you never spend a penny, never spend a thing. It gets bigger and bigger and bigger. Now this is like the energy. You're not spending the energy by doing anything. So it just goes into mindfulness, gets stronger and stronger. That light, that mind gets brighter and brighter. And many of you may have the experience that I had years and years ago, sometimes it was just so bright you thought you were going to go blind. You know, you can't look at such a brilliant object. But this is not watching it with your physical eye, this is with your mental eye. And there's no danger there at all. Just keep on going. So it gets so brilliant and so beautiful. By this time you're in ecstasy. And it opens out. And then you get into the jhanas. Just another layer of petals just opens and you're inside. So the jhanas, they are just right inside the nimitta layer of petals. And the nimitta layer of petals is right inside the delightful breath layer of petals. And the delightful breath layer of petals is right inside the sustained full awareness of the breath petals. And the full awareness of the breath petals right inside the breathing in, breathing out layer of petals. And the breathing in, breathing out layer of petals is right inside the present moment awareness, or the silence rather. And the silence is right inside the present moment, and the present moment is right inside of you now. So it is true to say that you have jhana already. It's right inside this very moment you're knowing right now. But it's all covered up, just needs to be opened. You have a lotus. Just need to find some way of allowing its layers of petals to open, 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 open. And for those who want to know about the other jhanas, the second jhana, the first jhana just opens out and you're in the second jhana. It's another layer of petals, but they really, really are profound now. And the third is inside the second, and the fourth is inside the third. The first immaterial is inside the fourth, the second inside the first immaterial, third inside the second, the fourth is inside the third, and inside the fourth, neither perception nor non-perception, inside of that, no more petals. There, to use Vajrayana, Om Mani Padme Hum. This is Om and Hum, are very equivalent to our Namo, as in Namo Tassa, or Namo Buddhaya, which is a greeting which the Buddhists in Indonesia use. Namo just means homage. So that Tibetan mantra, it means homage, Mani Padme homage. And the main two words are Mani Padme. And that means the jewel, Mani, Padme inside the lotus. There are some Sri Lankans here. Padma is a very common Sri Lankan name, meaning lotus. Padme is a locative, means in the lotus. So it's just like worship, homage to the jewel in the heart of the lotus. And that's what we're meaning here. When that last layer of petals opens out, There's a jewel in the very heart of the lotus. What's left when the petals of neither perception or non-perception, immaterial attainment, opens out? And you know what's in there? You know what that jewel is? Should I tell you? Nothing. Emptiness. Nothing there. Nibbana. The jewel in the heart of the lotus. See, opening up everything and everything and everything. And you realize that it's a true thing to say. Any meditator knows this. Nibbana, you have Nibbana right in the middle of this moment inside of you. You just need to open it out, first of all, to experience it. And that's how it works. Now, also, that simile is not just descriptive, showing you what happens when you let go, but it also makes it quite clear that your effort is just to stay still. Because imagine that sun goes behind a cloud. What happens next? The air petals bang, 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 bang. They close very quickly. The sun's gone in, or there's an eclipse or something. Or there's a dust storm. So you know, those dust storms, eclipses, clouds, they're called hindrances. You know, you want something, you know, sensual desire, ill will, sloth and torpor, restlessness, you know, just the sun can't shine on your lotus anymore, even doubt. What should I do? Remember that simile for doubt? Is it still yet? When's it going to be still? Should I do it another way? Should I put it over there? I should put it over here. Breath meditation? No, that's not right. Metta meditation. Metta meditation? No, let's do kasina. Things never get still that way with doubt. So those hindrances, I'll talk about them probably more tomorrow. You can understand what they're really trying to do here to keep things still. Your job is not to move. No desire, no ill will. Be content. Be peaceful. And be a passenger. And allow the lotus to open up all by itself. And that's just a wonderful way of experiencing the meditation. And it answers so many questions with that simile. You understand where the joy and the beauty of meditation comes from, and how the deeper you get, the more enjoyable it is. It also answers about insight and wisdom. You literally are seeing into the middle of that lotus, and understanding, you know, what this thing called body and mind, you really are, as it opens out to reveal its inner secrets. You're also understanding how the process happens, not through effort, but through stillness, which is the opposite of effort, and why very few people manage it, because we're addicted to effort, to craving, to doing things. We're addicted to making things happen, rather than letting things happen. So it's hard for us to do this. It goes against our brain. However, we're training. We can renounce. Monks and nuns are called renunciants, not just because they renounce worldly things, also because they renounce their will. They let go of doing things and controlling their lives. It's money and credit cards give you the freedom to control your lives, to come and go where you will, to have the power to eat what you want, when you want it. As monks, we let go of that will. It's very limited being a monk or being a nun. So many things we just cannot do. So many things we'd like to do, but we can't do. Just haven't got the means. I was telling somebody the other day that a few times, because I go on these conferences and these Dharma tours, the last time I went to Bali was to give a Dharma talk in a big hotel. That was the only venue they could find. But one of the Buddhists over in Bali owns a Jimbaran Beach Resort. So, looking for a place to stay, they put me up in a villa on a beach resort in Bali for the night. Would you like to do that? This is one of these great beach resorts, which I don't know how much you have to pay. right on the beach, beautiful little bungalow, my own swimming pool, the LED TV screens, I don't know how wide they were, maybe about 5-6 foot wide, a jacuzzi. What else did I have there? You know, it was torture, because I couldn't switch on the TV. Not allowed. I'm not allowed to use the jacuzzi. I could look at the swimming pool, but I couldn't jump in. All these things are wasted on a monk. I should have swapped with you. You'd have loved it. You'd have turned on the TV and gone for a jacuzzi and everything. All for free. But these things happen. And we renounce them. But renouncing what we really renounce, especially in meditation, what you have to renounce. You don't have to renounce your wealth and possessions, your family, your car, your home or anything when you meditate. But please renounce your will. Don't do anything. Give up control. Let go. And then you won't be moving this sun of mindfulness and compassion. And the whole mind will start to open out. And you see all these stages. So the main job of meditation, the effort which I was saying last night, is the effort to say no. No to doing things. No to rushing. No to expectations. No to sort of wanting something to happen quick. Saying no to all of those very, very worldly ways of looking at things. And saying yes to stillness. Saying yes to kindness. Real kindness, you know, the opening the door of your heart to this moment, no matter what it is. Pain, heat, cold, tiredness, open the door of your heart to it. Be content with it. That's also not doing any effort. Real kindness, real metta, is not something you do. It's something that happens when you don't do things. It's a state of inner relaxation. Not fighting the world, but being at peace with it. Loving it. That's why all these words, metta, letting go, peace, they're all pointing to the same thing. The beautiful stillness of the mind, which accepts this moment and allows it to open out so you can see what's inside. And as you go deeper, because it's no effort, there is no groaning. All groaning comes when you try, and you try, and you try. See, that's a groan. But when you really relax, you're not wasting time. When you really relax, you don't get sleepy. The sleepiness goes soon. When you really relax, you're still. Again, these beautiful mind states. Pure energy, not borrowed energy. And everything is just so bright, peaceful and beautiful. You're on the way. And you're sleeping for meditating or walking. Walking backwards and forwards. And they've got beautiful smiles on their face. Not fake smiles. But the smile of inner joy. Bursting out. That's our path of meditation. So using the simile of the lotus opening out. See if you can keep that in mind for the next few days. It shows you what happens, how it happens, and why it happens. What this meditation is all about. Opening things out. Not going on to the next thing. The next stage is right within the stage you're experiencing in this moment. You don't have to do anything. Just stay where you are. Wait. It will open out by itself. So, any questions or comments about this morning's talk on the path of inner journey into the center of you? Yeah. Great, that's par for the course. If you get a burst of emotions and you feel like you're crying, cry. And it's worthwhile doing. There's, you know, sometimes that I thought, oh, you're a monk, you're a man, tough monks don't cry. It's true, I'd never cry for disappointment or for anger, but I certainly cry for inspiration. And sometimes the inspiration gets so much, oh, just tears come naturally. You're not doing it, forcing it. It's just inspiration. It's one form of pity, of joy, which is supposed to happen. So when it happens, just let it come. And not girls, but boys as well, crying moment. Even the last one, Singapore retreat, a couple of weeks ago, a few people cried. Now we're not crying because, oh, my leg is hurting. You're not crying because, oh God, another 8 days to go. You're not crying because, oh no, some more potatoes. I hate potatoes for lunch. You're not crying for those sorts of things. You're just crying for just pure and utter joy. There's one of the couples, I won't say who it is, because they're well known to the people who hang around our centre in Nolamara. They went on a pilgrimage with me a few years ago to India. And the woman, the wife, an English lady, when I started giving some introduction of what we were going to do and the sorts of things which would happen on pilgrimage in India, I said from personal experience, there are some places you just have these huge emotions come up from nowhere and you'll feel like crying. It's so inspirational. And she told her husband afterwards, and he reported to me, he said, when you said that, she told me, Ajahn Brahm goes too far. What do you mean crying? Only a bunch of old ruins. You know, being at castles in England, you know, be seeing old people's cottages and stuff. Being born in England, you're used to these ancient ruins and history and stuff. That's all it is, just a bunch of ancient stones. So she thought I was absolutely crazy. And of course, what happened? The first place we went to landed, you know, in the Gaya airport to the hotel, and that evening, straight to the Mahabodhi temple in Bodh Gaya. And there she was walking in thinking she was just seeing a bunch of old ruins. She started crying, totally uncontrollable, and she couldn't stop it. She wept. She didn't know why. And she came and said, I apologize, Ajahn Brahm, I apologize. And it just, the emotions just took her. It was wonderful, and she enjoyed every moment of it, as you would. So if you have these emotions, don't try and control them. They're par for the course. Let them come and let them build up. After a while you can keep them inside. They just happen naturally. They don't sort of exude out onto the body. And I used this with my monks once, a similar of a leaky bucket. You're getting all the energy coming in, but you haven't let go of the body yet. So the energy sort of leaks into the body, you know, with physical sort of bliss and joy and emotions. But if that sort of energy, that emotion comes later on in the meditation, you're totally let go of the body, you can't feel the breath anymore, any part of the body, and that comes up into the mind, and that just powers a beautiful nimitta. All that emotional energy has not leaked back, it's got nowhere else to go, it just stays in the mind. However, when it leaks, it goes into your body. So, is that okay? I expect you to have lots and lots of tears, so please, I want to see a tissue box next to your seat. And same with each one of you, because it happens. There's tissues up here, tissues up here. You know, these are for you to borrow, not just for us. Tears of joy. If it's tears of pain, oh, come on, be kind to yourself. Tears of joy. I've often said, and this is just anecdotal experience, that in all the years I've taught meditation, I find the female has an easier time getting into jhana than the male. But don't worry, men, because although it takes you a bit longer, average, you can usually get insight much quicker. And I often wonder why that's the case, and I think it really is the case that especially the deeper jhana, the deeper stages of meditation into the jhana, means you have to have an emotional confidence. You feel your way into the jhanas. And you have to trust in those incredibly strong emotions. Which, you know, sometimes for a man it just, you don't know how to handle it. And sometimes we're afraid of things we can't think about. And we can't sort of understand through concepts. It's very much a feely-feely path, the higher stages. So I usually find that females have an easier time getting in. Not all the time. This is total generalization. Some men are brilliant meditators and they get in much faster than women. But generally speaking, that's the case. And that's really the point of me saying that, is that because the emotions are important, to be able to handle and take those emotions and not repress them and allow them to become very strong. That's important in the later stages. The nirvana gets incredibly emotionally potent. Let it come. No fear. And then just the jhanas happen. They're powerful, immense states. Does that make sense there? Of course, they're very cognizant of gender equality, so I always have to balance that by saying, but the men afterwards, you know, you get the jhanas easily, you women, but you know, to figure them out and turn them into insight, the men catch you up. Generally speaking. Otherwise, someone would take me to court and sue me. Any comment on that now? Okay, so I'm going to let you go and have some happy meditation. As I mentioned yesterday, there'll be no interviews this morning because I want to go into Nolamara for the lunch. I've got some just things to say to the Thai people over there, especially about the Bhikkhuni ordination, to make sure they're all happy about things. But I'll be back this afternoon. So there are interviews this afternoon from 3 p.m. until 5 p.m. So if already a couple of people have got their names down, so if you want to put your name down, please put the name down in order. And 3 p.m. to 5 p.m. in the space between the offices is where the interviews will take place. And in the meantime, I wish you happy meditation and hope to see lots of tears and smiles this afternoon. Happy meditation.